Emissions cheating was one of the biggest corporate scandals ever to hit the car industry. What has it taught us about the impact of pollution from car engines on our health? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In 2008, Volkswagen introduced a new generation of supposedly clean diesel passenger cars. Emissions tests showed they had huge environmental benefits, but VW had installed defeat devices in these cars. That's software that had been designed to make the engine behave differently during those tests. And meanwhile, in the real world, those engines were pumping out as much nitrogen dioxide as 150 petrol engine cars. A new discussion paper from the CEPR uses this scandal to estimate the effect on infant health of car pollution, and use that to gain new insights into the impact of pollution from cars in general. Joining us today is Hannes Schwandt from Northwestern University. Hannes is a CEPR researcher, and he's one of the authors. Hannes, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
Now, the scale of this emissions scandal is literally, in this case, breathtaking. How many cars are we talking about with these defeat devices over how many years?
So, in total, we're talking about around 600,000 cars that were rolled out between 2008 and 2015. So that's quite a bunch of cars. But of course, in terms of, you know, the overall US car market, that's just a very small share. And I think what's really breathtaking is what you already mentioned. It's just like how much each individual of those cars pollutes. Now, you mentioned the numbers, like up to 150 times as much as one of the normal gasoline-fueled cars. And we estimate that those 600,000 additional emissions cheating cars cost 38,000 babies to be born with low birth weight.
And do those effects on infants persist, Hannes?
Impaired fetal development, such as low birth weight, it's not only associated or leading to higher medical costs right away after birth, around birth. It has these really bad long-term effects throughout the entire life cycle. So you see that infants born with low birth weight have, for example, lower test scores, but then also later on, they have lower wages, they have poorer health. So what this means is that the effects that we find here on fetal development have negative impacts for like many decades to come on society.
So we'll work through on how we get to that. But one thing I wanted to point out right at the beginning that I learned from your paper is that we know a lot about air pollution in general and its effects, but it has been very difficult to isolate the contribution of vehicles to that pollution. What do we know so far about that?
So, of course, there's like a gigantic literature, not only on overall pollution health, but then there's also like many studies that have looked at pollution that's associated to car exhaust. The problem is, and I think we will talk more about this, it's just like not that easy to just correlate car pollution and health and then say something about causal mechanisms. So you have to do like a little bit more. Mm. And there have been so far only quite few papers that take in what it's called like a quasi-experimental approach that allows to disentangle causal effects for very disadvantaged populations that live close to highways or to other areas with very high pollution. Mm. For those populations, car pollution is bad. And, you know, for like very sick infants that die in response to an increase in traffic close to a highway within like 1 or 2 days, like, you know, very marginal, very sick and very disadvantaged populations. For those, we know they are affected by car pollution if they're living next to hotspots, such as highways. But we know very little about the effects of just like moderate car pollution for the general population. So really just like the bulk of, you know, what's happening in society, we don't know about those effects.
Is this gap in our knowledge one of the reasons why we haven't seen more effective, stronger regulation in this area so far?
That sounds like a reasonable hypothesis to me. Of course, there you enter like the political arena that as an economist, I'm not really too knowledgeable about. What I can say is that there is just a whole range of regulatory tools that we have at our hands when it comes to car emissions. And there are studies from environmental scientists who show that often car regulation is much cheaper and like much easier to do than the regulation of point sources and of power plants and so on. Like it's often cheaper to achieve the same emissions reductions if it's coming from car regulation. But of course, not all improvements in car pollution has to come from just regulatory sources, because first of all, cars are driven by private households. Mm. So it's really something that the overall society is contributing actively to. And just informing households and citizens, consumers,
yeah,
about the health effects, you know, the immediate health effects, the very local health effects of car pollution, that can have already like a huge response. So, you know, there is a lot of things that can be done. And the fact that we know very little about car pollution and the effect on population health, that makes it very likely that this is the reason why there is not yet all the regulation and all the consumer response that we would see in the presence of knowledge of all those effects.
The more we know about this, the better it is, as you say, both from a regulatory point of view and also because we can make informed decisions as individuals. So let's have a look at what you found out about it. You've got here a natural experiment for the effects of car pollution. Can you explain why this scandal has given us a natural experiment, how that works?
So I think first you have to understand, like, why can we not just go simply out there and just like take pollution measures and relate it to impact to health, and then we know what's the effect of pollution on health, right? So the first important thing is that there's a lot of selection of who lives in which areas, which kind of people drive like dirty or cleaner cars. And in general, you see that poorer populations, less healthy populations live in more polluted areas. Mm. And then it's not clear, is it really the pollution that's causing this poorer health? Or is it the other way around, that maybe people were like unhealthy to begin with and that's and less wealthy and they can afford only to live in like more polluted areas? So that's one problem. Another problem is that for many big pollution sources, let's say highway pollution, or like if you live next to a power plant, those kind of pollution that's very observable, very, very visible to the population, then people tend to try to avoid it, right? Like, I mean, you're not going to have a barbecue next to a highway, or like if you live next to a highway, you will try to close your windows and you will not go running just like circles around a really polluting coal plant or something.
Mm.
That means if we just look at the data of like, oh, here's a lot of pollution, what's the health response? We might see a muted. It might not be showing the real overall health response.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third factor why it's really difficult just to go out there, you know, and like relate pollution measures with health measures is that pollution is actually not very well measured so far. So car pollution, you know, we just have a bunch of pollution monitors, like very few pollution monitors in a minority of counties. So only like a couple hundred counties in the US have pollution monitors. We have a very coarse measurement of car pollution. And in a statistical sense, that's a little bit more complicated, but just like in general, if you have very noisy measurement, this will attenuate effects towards zero. So this will make effects look smaller and smaller and smaller the more noise you have in the data. So overall, if you just relate these measures of pollution and health in the general data, potentially you will just not learn a lot. So why is the emissions cheating so different? So first, in terms of selection, the amazing thing about the emissions cheating scandal is that people just really didn't know about it.
Nobody knew anything different, yes.
That there was so much pollution. And on top of that, Volkswagen really marketed those cheating cars as environmentally friendly to a whole new segment of environmentally conscious consumers. So these cars went, if anything, to richer areas,
mm-hmm,
and to higher income areas, to healthier areas, to cleaner areas. So you have this unique situation where suddenly a lot of pollution unknowingly to the population, so they can't, you know, avoid it. It's not that they say, oh, there's a cheating diesel car, like, let me hide in the house. This big pollution source comes into areas that typically faces less pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing, what's really useful in terms of the measurement, we have very good data on where exactly, in which counties all these cheating cars ended up. So we can really like trace these pollution sources very well over the entire country. And even if in a county there is no pollution monitor, we still know like pollution has increased because those cars, those cheating diesel cars, ended up in those counties. And so this emissions cheating scandal really provided us with a unique opportunity to solve this trio of empirical challenges, like selection, avoidance behavior, and measurement problems. All of this is solved when we look at these emissions cheating diesel cars.
Yes, because I was going to ask you about where you got the data from, and was it good enough quality, detailed enough data to be able to establish a causal effect? And it's all based on the fact that you know where these cars were.
Exactly. So we have car registration data for different years, and so we know for the overall US, for all counties, we know the number of overall cars, and we know which of those cars were those cheating diesel cars.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that's really useful is we also have information on these cheating diesel cars. All of those cars had a gas option.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exactly the same. It looks the same car. It looks the same. It's the same car, except that instead of a diesel, it has a gas engine. So it was then not polluting more. It was not cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, we see that the consumers that tend to buy those cheating diesel cars, they're very similar to those that bought these gas options of those diesel cars.
Yes.
And but there's still some variation. There's still enough variation for us. So we see some counties have more cheating diesels, other ones have more of those gas option cars, right? So then we can have really a good placebo in effect, right? Because for the consumers, those cars look very similar. They were similarly priced, you know, the same brand. It was the same model year. And for them, it looked very similar. But in one case, you have a strong polluting car. In the other one, the car is actually, if anything, cleaner than the average car in the market because it was just a new gasoline car.
So tell us about the health effects that you managed to uncover. You've already given us one quite surprising figure. Was there anything else that you found out?
So first of all, importantly, we can measure impacts on ambient air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So this hasn't been shown before. Like there have been big studies of very renowned environmental scientists that modeled the impact on ambient air pollution of those cheating diesel cars.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, nobody has shown that actually in those monitors, you could see in the counties where those cheating diesel cars ended up an increase in ambient air pollution. And interestingly, you know, if you look what's the effect of these gas options, right, that I just mentioned. So the same car, except that they had a gas engine instead of a diesel engine, we don't see any response there in terms of increases in air pollution. And we see in particular increases in particulate matter, 2.5, and in ozone, which are both known to be caused in particular by diesel exhaust. And these are exactly the pollutants that are particularly harmful for population health.
So then you have the pollution, you've established that the pollution is there. How do you then connect that to the effect on health?
So what we are focusing on in the paper at the moment is infant health and birth outcomes,
mm-hmm.
and also child health. And when we look at infant health, we find strong decreases in birth weight, as well as increases in the rate of low birth weight infants. Low birth weight is defined as a baby that is born with less than 2,500 grams. And that is a medical cutoff that is considered problematic on average, of course. You know, that never means anything for an individual baby, but just on average, negative outcomes have been shown to be caused by low birth weight. And we find for every additional cheating car per 1,000 cars, so it's really just like, you know, one car per 1,000, we find a 2% increase in the rate of low birth weight.
Wow.
The reason, you know, how is it possible that, you know, the median county has 1.6 cheating diesel cars per 1,000 cars. So that really just sounds like a very marginal impact in terms of the car composition. But we have to keep in mind that each cheating car pollutes as much as 50 to 150 you know, regular cars. So if you take the midpoint, let's say it pollutes as much as 100 cars, that means like one additional cheating car per 1,000, that's an increase equivalent to 10% increase in overall cars. You could translate it in a way, you could say a 10% increase in passenger car pollution leads to a 2% increase in the rate of low birth weight.
Can we extend this to adults as well? Is there any evidence that this might have caused excess deaths, for example?
So at the moment, beyond infants, we look at children and we find an increase in asthma, emergency department visits. So that is indicative of car pollution causing acute asthma attacks. And we find quite a sizable effect of an 8% increase for every additional cheating car per 1,000.
Wow.
That's in line with previous research that has shown that pollution has strong effects on asthma. And we can look at all these magnitudes that we find and compare them both to kind of like environmental literature based on what we know, you know, how much additional pollution those cars generated and what other studies would suggest the health effects to be. We can also compare to other quasi-experimental studies. For example, there have been studies that look at, you know, plant closures, plant openings, and the effects on asthma, and we find very similar magnitudes there. So the magnitudes, even though they're quite large, they definitely are in the range of what we would expect to find. We haven't so far looked at, for example, mortality at older ages. That's something we will definitely do. That's like on our to-do list as the next step. However, what's important to keep in mind is that at older ages, it might often take, you know, more time for health effects to appear in the data, right? Nevertheless, there have been studies that link air pollution to mortality. So, for example, changes in the wind direction that increases or decreases air pollution in areas in the U.S. from one day to the other, that this impacts mortality over the next 3 days, so 3-day mortality. At the same time, of course, like what kind of people are the ones that are affected, like whose mortality is affected because of an air pollution change from one day to the other, right? Who then die within 3 days. These are, of course, populations that are very, very sick to begin with, right? So then we are again talking about a very marginal, very disadvantaged part of population and probably not the health effects that really matter for broader society.
You mentioned before that air pollution in general is a problem that tends to affect poorer people. This has affected every social class, hasn't it?
Yeah, so this was for us an extremely fascinating finding, is that the preponderance of evidence of the effect of air pollution on health really always finds that more disadvantaged populations, like poorer populations, are much more affected. And often they're the only one where you can really find impacts of air pollution on health. And in our study, we find that, if anything, more advantaged populations have the strongest effect. So, for example, if we look at like non-Hispanic white mothers with a college degree, there we find much stronger effects than, let's say, minority mothers that only have a high school degree. And the most plausible explanation for this is that they were simply more exposed to these cheating cars, because that's, like, as I mentioned, those cars, they're predominantly bought in higher income areas. So we see that richer mothers are more exposed and they also are more impacted. This is still very interesting because a lot of the previous literature had hypothesized that one reason why poorer people are more affected is because they have poorer baseline health, right? And then you have like an additional insult to the health, and that leads to this poor health outcomes, or because they also don't have a good medical care, like access to medical care. What has been hypothesized that this could be explaining a lot of these health effects of pollution. Now, what our study shows is that this is not the case. Just like being healthy and having good health insurance, that doesn't buffer those effects of air pollution. And it suggests that air pollution really harms everyone. It's a phenomenon that matters for the whole society. And that also, in turn, means if we manage to decrease air pollution in our society through regulation, through consumer responses, that will benefit everyone.
And you also tend to hear on the news people talking loosely about a safe level of pollution, bringing pollution down to safe levels. Does your data imply that there is a safe level?
So that's another really, I think, fascinating outcome that we didn't expect, is that the pollution effects we measure seem to be relatively linear. So we see that similar, you know, incremental insults on health, both at low levels of pollution as well as high levels of pollution. And for example, another thing we can do, we can just focus on counties that in the baseline years have had good levels of pollution. We find very similar effects there as in counties with bad air pollution. So it seems from our results, it seems that there is really no safe level of car pollution in particular. That's important because, yeah, as you mentioned, there has been some debates about those safe levels in particular. You know, there have been policy proposals to only account for pollution improvements above those thresholds, right? Only in counties where, you know, like the pollution is bad. Our results suggest that this is not a very reasonable proposal, because even in less polluted areas, if you are able to decrease pollution further, this will benefit the population health.
This scandal blew up almost 4 years ago now, so hopefully most of these diesel cars are off the road now, will soon be off the road. So is this a piece of economic history, or do we learn things from this that are directly policy relevant today?
So as I mentioned, I think these cheating diesel cars, they were really a unique opportunity to have this natural experiment, right? And so even though we hope that, yes, their history, cheating diesel cars will not return quickly, this has been given us this unique insight to learn about the pollution effects of, you know, of cars in general on health. Now, of course, the other big development is that we see more and more hybrids. We see electrical cars. And we could envision a future where, you know, all passenger cars are electric. And I hope very much that this is the case. And then, you know, maybe this would truly be a more historic paper. That's still a very long way to get there, right? It's still like kind of like an utopian vision. And I think if our paper helps to speed up that process a little bit, right, and gives regulators the right arguments to decrease emissions, also to inform consumers, maybe to weigh more the electric or hybrid options, I think then this is a very great impact already of that paper.
There's one thing we haven't talked about, and we'll just finish off with this, is the conduct of Volkswagen in all of this. It's a real case study of how organizations can seek to game regulation, to get round it, rather than work with it. So we often ask the people we talk to on Vox Talks, what would they do if they were policymaker for a day? So we're making you policymaker for a day, Hannes. And if you were in that role, would you be putting more effort into making sure that people comply with regulation rather than what we constantly hear about, which is that we need more regulation?
Absolutely. So the Volkswagen case very clearly shows that enforcement is extremely crucial, especially if you have a stricter regulation, right? Because kind of like the tragic irony of the Volkswagen scandal was that Volkswagen responded to tighter regulation by producing like the worst polluting cars ever, you know?
Yeah.
And it very clearly backfired in that respect. And of course, like, you know, if you look at those pollution numbers, you think about like, what were they thinking? You know, how would they think to get away with this, right? Mm. They really celebrated themselves as like heroes of a green car movement. So they won the Green Car of the Year award in 2 years with those cheating diesel cars. And I think what you read about Volkswagen's mindset and their time is what they came from, you know, the European settings where they were just very used to get away with a lot. So there was like a lot of regulation, but there really no enforcement. And I think what really this tells us, given the current development in the US, that budgets are like cut and cut of regulatory bodies, that often means that there's less enforcement, which then means that, you know, why would you regulate in the first place if you can't enforce it? So yes, if I was a policymaker for one day, I would definitely try to direct resources to enforcement. And then also, of course, when new studies like this come out, just to make sure that the population hears about it, like to spread the knowledge, to information, to consumers. So in the best case, you don't even have to regulate so much because consumers take it into account in their choices themselves.
Well, let's hope that those impacts happen and that regulators are listening. An amazing scandal and very surprising piece of work, Hannes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The discussion paper we've been talking about is The Impact of Car Pollution on Infant and Child Health, Evidence from Emissions Cheating. And the authors are Hannes and Diane Alexander. It's CEPR discussion paper 13805.
Next week on Vox Talks, the chief economist of the OECD discusses France's broken social elevator.
We have profound inequality, which we correct with massive transfers. And when you compare with other countries, like, for example, Germany or Sweden, they seem to redistribute less, but the initial level of inequality is much less. And politically, we may have a system that's not very sustainable compared with these countries.
If you don't want to miss that, subscribe on your podcast platform. And remember to check out our archive at voxeu.org/vox-talks.